It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
The Kent Goslin from the Hartford Courant. Is this your first time here?
This is my first time in the studio, yes.
Ever, not with Ray Dunaway or anybody?
I interviewed him once here, okay?
For a story?
For a story when he retired, okay? But we were not on the air at the time. So this is my first time here on the air.
Now, when you started in, print, first of all, how long have you been at the Courant?
Since 1986.
And was that, okay, so that's a long time. You're coming up on
40.
40.
Yes.
Was it your first job?
No, I freelanced for a couple of years. And
at the Courant?
No, for other publications, business publications.
Yeah. So you were always on the business side of journalism?
That's correct. Well, in the beginning. And then when I came to the Courant, I covered a town for several years. Before
the business beat opened up, or
yes, a job opened up, and I was hired for it.
Like many of the newspapers. I mean, when I first moved to Connecticut in '98, listen, they're all a little different than they used to be, and I haven't read a print edition in a long time. But the Courant was both really impressive, but the task daunting too. Like I come from mainly a sports background before I went into the business side of things, and they covered New York and Boston both equally, and that's almost unsustainable, right?
They did.
But the paper, I just remember we would go to the Quaker Diner and read it back to front, and it was, not saying it's not, but it's obviously different.
It definitely is different.
And, I still, obviously, between you and Christopher Keating and Mahoney, I worry, though. I said this to Keating, and I don't think this is treading on territory you don't want to touch, but I worry about when you guys retire.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, there a lot of institutional knowledge. It sounds fancy.
But it's true.
It's just remembering what happened before.
Back in 1994 when they tried this, and then Roland did that, and then Rell did that.
Right.
That's
gone. Right, exactly. And that's that's really critical to putting that context around an issue that's happening and to understand how that is placed in the sweep of history of things. And
especially in Hartford.
Whether a mistake is getting repeated or you just, those are things that you can spot.
Yeah. And that there'll be, in my opinion, a real loss there. And it's not that there aren't good young reporters, but they won't have that institutional knowledge, and they'll probably – I mean, I've seen a lot of young reporters use this region as a stepping stone to other places. What we're going to do this morning with Ken, and I'm grateful for his time, is he wrote a piece, and he writes often. He cranks out a lot of copy, and there's a lot to talk about. But he wrote a piece that basically broke down the seven – I was going to say six or seven, but I didn't want to get cringy with the kids. The seven development projects to watch next year. Uh-huh. And this is Hartford focused. This is not statewide.
This is Hartford focused.
We're talking Hartford. And we'll sort of go one by one, if you don't mind.
No.
Some of them with more attention than others. The overarching question to me is, which we can talk about maybe at the end as well, but I look at Hartford sometimes as an unwinnable war. Like, I'm not sure if they can do what they want to do ever. Doesn't mean you shouldn't try, and it doesn't mean I don't respect the people that are really dedicated to doing it. Mm-hmm. But do you think that there's been, like, maybe it's People's Bank or whatever, before we get to the project by project, Do you think a corner's been turned, or are we in roughly the same kind of feel that we had a year ago today?
I think we're still in that area, still struggling to come out of, before the pandemic, I would say, there really felt like there was some momentum building. And the pandemic really took the wind out of that.
Because it took all the workers out?
It took a lot of the workers out. And as you know, the workers are a huge part of the economy downtown anyway. And that ripples out to all the businesses that they might visit on lunch hour or before or after work. So that has been a struggle. Now, that has been offset a little bit by the new apartments that have come in.
I never see anybody in those apartments. I don't see anybody.
Okay, they are in their apartments, okay. But they're maybe not coming out and walk. You know, some people walking their dog or whatever, but maybe they're not out on the street all the time. But
and it's not that big a critical mass. It's a couple hundred people.
It's in the last decade, 3,000 apartments, so more north of 3,000 have been added right in the downtown and right around the downtown.
And then there's a high occupancy rate?
If the statistics that I have seen show in all the newer projects, 90 or better occupancy.
One question: What do we got to do, Matt? Do you need a break, or can we take it to traffic, or what? Matt, do we need to? Can I take another minute? Okay. The question I have is, you know, Lamont collectively bargained away mandating return to work, and I don't think this is talked about enough. If he threw the gauntlet down somehow and got that back, and mandated all state employees come back, how much of a difference would that make?
Huge. Absolutely huge. Anyone that you would talk to who owns a business, restaurant, bar downtown would say that would be a quote-unquote game changer to get all those workers back.
It would.
Without a doubt. Because if you look at how many state offices there are, okay, that is...
They're consolidating those though, right? Haven't they?
They have done some consolidation, yes. But it would just be a huge, you know, boost downtown. And anyone, as I said, who I've talked to about that issue has said it'd be huge.
I don't think it's discussed enough. And I mean, I get along fine with the governor, but I don't know what they can do, but they got to get that back.
It would be a huge, yeah. Huge help.
We're here with Ken Gossin from the Hartford Courant. My best thing is, because he goes by Kenneth, and the same thing with Keating, he goes by Christopher, but if you just do Gosselin and Courant, you'll get to his jump page and you see that's one thing the Courant does really well, among other things, is that I can see everything you've written, you know, and it's nice to just use that as a starting point. But we were talking about the return to work before we get to the projects. I was talking about the public sector with right. Lamont. What about the private sector?
So some of the larger employers downtown, Travelers, the Hartford, and even Nassau Financial in the boat building, they are trying to get more of their workers to come back, and they're encouraging them to do that.
Why can't they just make them? They're not union shops.
No, they're not. You're right. Okay, you can only force so much, and then you might lose people. Okay, so you've got to walk this tightrope a little bit. And what their Travelers in particular has built out a huge new cafeteria. I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's huge. And is offering other perks to get their employees to come in more often.
How screwed would Hartford be without the Travelers? They're the most important corporate partner in the city, aren't they?
Well, they're right up there with the Hartford up on Asylum Hill. But they're critical.
If we ever lost them between the golf tournament and the city, it would be a disaster sure. I think that it's interesting they'd worry they would lose people. I guess maybe if the economy ever turned, maybe they'd have a little stronger hand. Because right now people still feel like they have mobility, and maybe they wouldn't feel like they would. You know, Hartford is, you know, I've given my sentiment. I love, you know, especially the people who are working for it. I want to start with Pratt Street, because there's a couple of things as we look ahead to 2026. you already have some things there. You know, like I, when the U.S. men's soccer team comes, I go to Vaughn's. I like Urban Lodge before a game. I've been to Hartford Taste a couple times. It's a little bit pricey, although happy hours are great. But the ambiance in there is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And there's some other stores. The card shop does well. But it just doesn't, on a regular Wednesday, it doesn't have the traffic. It just doesn't. And so I'm curious about, we'll get to the Heartlift part two in a second, mm-hmm. but the UConn students, can you talk about, because that's right on the corner, and I know, just talk about that project, and the two things are, is it enough people to move the needle commercially, and also will it possibly lead to more housing for more students?
I think that, just to a little background here, underway right now is construction of a permanent dorm, and that's right off of Pratt Street. I was in there last week. The work is progressing. They're going to be done by July. 200 students could be accommodated, 50 suites. And so the hope is to bring a younger vibe in, a college town. For many, many years, Hartford talked about wanting to be more of a college
town. Yeah, but you need 2,000, not 200.
Yes, agreed 100%. But you have to start somewhere, and that's where they're hoping to start with this. And that would bring students, they'd be living there, hopefully be out, going to places, just more people on the street. And it's something that you just mentioned that, you know, you sometimes you go to Pratt Street and there's nobody there.
So you think that if it goes decent, because they have a housing problem in stores.
They do.
So yeah. I don't know why are there conversations about a grander bargain, like to make a bigger, like almost like, I've always felt like they should find a way with all the blight and open properties to make a mini campus or mm-hmm. something. Like I thought the, was it RIT or RPI property would have been perfect for mm-hmm. that.
That I think was a more aging property. There were other problems.
Even if they raised it and destroyed it and built something up, I don't know. Okay.
Well, it had, just to catch up a little bit, it has been raised. The tower has come down, and there's the developer, Randy Salvatore, is looking in the future doing something there with residential, but also could be something else with that. So
okay, so back to the Pratt Street with UConn. I'm assuming that they'll have no problem getting 200 kids in that space. It'll definitely be open for the fall, so we'll have to see. 200 to me doesn't move the needle, but we'll sort of see. And I mean, it's enough to keep those places open. I mean, the Starbucks doesn't open on the weekends. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane to me that you have a city where the Starbucks, and I don't like Starbucks, by the way, but that to me is exhibit A. If the Starbucks started opening on weekends, that would be my indicator. Mm-hmm. It really would be. And the second part is the incentivizing from storefronts. Now, it's not right on Pratt, but the stuff right by the People's mm-hmm. Bank Arena. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so this is a program that is very similar, not exactly the same as what was called the Heartlift program, which was under the previous mayor, Bronin.
Right.
That was $9 million. It gave matching grants to property owners to, you know, try to get some of their storefronts filled. And it had a certain amount of success, actually drew a lot of attention, some national attention. And this is a similar type, okay, $2 million. Looking particularly at those spaces in right around the arena area there, and I don't know if you've walked along when you go into the Trumbull Street entrance, it's empty. And the hope is to try to get some businesses in there, okay? The problem with those spaces is they're just like a blank box. There's no plumbing, there's no electricity. So
oh, really?
So it's expensive to do something there. So the hope is that these grants will help offset some of that cost.
So that infrastructure could be put in?
Yeah, and that's what would help. That's what this funding would help with.
So, but then it's a chicken or the egg argument. You can incentivize people to try to set up shop, but are people going to patronize these places and keep them sustainable? I thought it was stupid, and I hate to say it like this because it's harsh, but the sports book on the other side of the building makes zero sense. Mm-hmm. Nobody can find it. You know, there's no foot traffic, even on an event night, no, whatever. Like, if you had that in the front, mm-hmm. it would be a different story. Now, I don't love those kind of establishments necessarily, but it would be a different ballgame. But maybe it's because they couldn't get the infrastructure that they didn't do it. I don't know.
The problem, they could not see, the problem with the way the arena is set up is, okay, the state controls the arena, but a lot of the space around it is privately controlled. So, like, the atrium is owned by a private property owner. So that's not the – yeah, it is a weird way the whole thing was put together some 25 years ago. So that was a problem, but they did have that space in the back. Now, I would agree with you that it is hard to find, although there's a very large Arrows now, but it has not seen the traffic.
It's a terrible spot, you know, and it's unfortunate. We're here with Ken Goslin from the Hartford Courant, and, you know, I do want to take this opportunity. You know, for me, I came back to this market in 2019, and I commuted back and forth to Boston for my TV job, and then I came here full-time like 3 years ago. I really appreciated the relationship. I said this to you personally, but I appreciate the relationship, your willingness to come on the show to talk about your stories. And again, like, I take the original Morning Joe, which was sort of where I learned a lot, was the concept of the show was really to promote good journalism and journalists. And I really love that concept, and that's what I've tried to do here. But you need people to buy in. And I know you want to get your stuff read and consumed, so I know there's a mutualistic element here, but you've always been willing to come on the show. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate you asking me, and I've said this to many people, that you do your homework, and it shows in the questions that you ask.
Well, thank you. And I, you know, the folks at the Courant, I mean, I thought Mahoney killed it on the Pura story, and he deserves a lot of mention. And, you know, and Keating, you know, he just knows so much about what's going on at the Capitol. And I think of the three, there are many others, right? There are many other really good reporters, but I think of the three of you first and foremost, and Lori.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year, because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sophia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media, and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life, and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Riley in sports does such a great job.
He's fabulous.
And so let's talk a little bit. Now, the Hartford Foundation thing, you know, that's definitely going to, like, I think of Hartford, you and I have talked, I think of proposals. I kind of snore at a proposals now until shovels hit the ground. But they mean it. They're gonna build this building. And my curiosity, because I don't know much about them, like how much money they have and like, what is the impact here? Because to spend $35 million on a building, they're not going to get any ROI off this building, right? This is a building they're building for themselves. Mm-hmm. They're not going to sell anything or lease anything. I mean, they're just building it. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the project, the location of it, because it's a little bit geographically important. And then, you know, why would they do it?
Yeah, it's $35 million that they are investing.
It's a big number.
So it is a large number, but they have an endowment that is enormous.
How big?
Like $1 billion.
It's that big.
Yeah. And that is part of a very large part of how they do their grants to nonprofits. And their whole outlook is and they've been around for 100 years. So they have a big track record. And what they're trying to do is kind of improve economic mobility, okay? And so that's a fancy way of saying, you know, make people's lives better, you know? And like kind of attack this structural racism in society. So that's kind of their outlook, okay? And that's how they really focus a lot of their grants that they make. And those grants are made to nonprofits that then do things in the community. So their thought was, okay, we really need to be in a community, like on the ground in a community of which is a part of what, you know, their mission, what they want
to do.
So
like you mean the building is sort of, they wanted to elevate the area that they build it?
Yes, yes, exactly. And it is in an area that has been talked about for 15 or more years, I would say, as being a connection between downtown and the northern neighborhoods in the city, okay? Just by way of a little background, the city got split in the 1960s and 70s with the interstate highway construction.
Some say the worst decision in the history of mankind.
Yeah, and it's still trying, and it didn't only happen at Hartford, it happened in New Haven, other cities, Meriden, where I come from, same thing. So the idea is they want to try to bring these areas back together again a little bit. And the area where the foundation is going to be building is right at a very critical spot. It's where Main Street, right past the ballpark, and comes together with Albany Avenue, which leads out to the North End and is a huge commuting, or you know, was when a lot of people were commuting in and out of Hartford, okay? So that area is right where they are going to build here. So they're seeing this as a connection. But it is not downtown. It is in the Clay Arsenal neighborhood.
Yeah. Ken Goslin joining us from the Hartford Current. We were talking about the Hartford Foundation, which I think is great. And I wonder what part, and you don't have to answer, is what part of the construction, maybe they're going to have some community outreachy components of this, the project. I don't really know, because that's not really what they do. They're not programmatic, right?
They're not, but that is, you correctly point out, is something they want to do. They want to community groups to come in and use their space. Okay, right now they're located in what is on Columbus Boulevard, the Candy Cane Building. You know, it has that candy cane design on it, that's what everyone calls it. And they didn't see that as a.
It's not warm, but it's not welcoming.
Well, yeah. It's not easy for community groups to necessarily park and get up there.
Right.
This is right in the community.
So I have blind spots in Hartford. Like, I don't know anything. Constitution Plaza, I don't know anything about it, right? But it sounds to me that there's so many, you talked about the People's Bank Arena where like this is owned by this and that's owned by, it seems like the problem there is that it's not one unified ownership, because it's like, okay, well, let's just do this. And you just can't because there's too many stakeholders.
Right. And Constitution Plaza is a huge problem for the city right now because six of the buildings were in foreclosure. They were owned by one owner. And so that's happening, okay?
Could the state come in and just buy it?
I'm
a linear thinker.
I guess anything's possible, but that's buying a lot of empty office space.
Right, but then it's, you get something you can do something with. I'm looking for grand bargains. I'm looking for like foresight.
Well, you mentioned before UConn and education, okay? So maybe that is something that would be a component to rethinking Constitution Plaza.
But you said Constitution Plaza is some of these properties are not good for transforming into residential or something else. But you said Constitution Plaza isn't bad for that.
Yes, yes. Because if you look at the buildings, some of these large office towers, okay, they're broad and they have a lot of interior space. And if you have apartments, you need to have windows.
Right.
Okay. The Constitution Plaza buildings are narrower and they kind of lend themselves to apartments.
To have more outward facing
right
elements,
exactly.
Whereas like the others would have like
there's too much interior space.
Too much prison cellish or the dead space or whatever in the middle.
Right.
Interesting. So I don't want to stick on Constitution Plaza because there's no exit ramp for that for a long time.
Well, I'll tell you why I include it on the list, because it's something that has to be dealt with. Okay, it just has to be dealt with, and there are hopefully discussions. There are discussions going on about it. So but that's why I included it on the list, because it's just something that really needs to happen.
Yeah. There are two places, you know, that I think that you, if you're not optimistic, that has even more potential than others. I always say, like, I look at some of the architecture in Hartford. I'm like, this place has such good bones. There are some beautiful buildings. I mean, just really stunning. American Northeast arc. I just love it, and I just it makes me sad and mad that there's not more in it. The two areas that I want to focus on are Bushnell Park and Duncan Park, which is not true. The Duncan Park is in a weird area, and it's, you know, because it's a little, you got to walk over to get toward People's Bank or whatever, and I don't know all the streets like you do, but they've had a lot of construction. And now the second apartment building, I think, is almost done, right?
Yes.
And then there's the blighted building behind it that's going to be taken down and used for some AI thing. But the part of that story that I don't think is told enough is the hotel. To me, that area has a ton of potential. You get more foot traffic. Like, I don't even know. You should do a story on that coffee shop. I want to know how that coffee shop's doing. I want to know if they're doing okay, because I never see anybody in there, but there's this big apartment building. So I really am curious how they're doing. But how they do that property in the back is going to be really important. And my question is, this AI thing, is this PR and hokey because it's the thing of the day is AI? Like, or is it going to actually be something that's going to be substantive?
That is the hope, okay? And again, goes back to your criticism of proposals not happening.
You're right.
But
well, they're definitely going to knock it down, though.
That is definitely coming down. And I tell you, I was inside that thing.
What's it like?
There's no electricity, of course, so we're using flashlights.
Is it scary?
It's an unbelievable place because, of course, people have been living in there, and you know, there's all evidence.
Oh, like squatters and stuff. There's excrement and stuff. Like,
well, I don't know if I stepped in anything.
Okay,
but needles and just everything.
Really?
Yeah, and what I found fascinating inside that building was that there are things called traps. Okay, and these are things that people who are living in there set up. So if someone comes along and it's dark and they hit something, it makes a noise.
It alerts them that someone's there?
Right, exactly. Wow. So it's just it was fascinating to be inside there. It was just amazing. But yes, that is coming down. That is coming down.
I always see these big woodchucks that are underneath it. I do. Like, I'll walk up to Duncan Park for a game. Listen, I'm very partial to that because I think that even though there's a ton of controversy at the front end and some people think it's still a financial drag on the city.
Well, it is.
I think that park is institutionally important and worth it. I mean, I don't care that the Solomons made some money off it because I think that the cost benefit is there. Like, maybe you disagree. I don't know. I get a lot from a lot of people. How much is the burden on the city for that park?
Well, they financed it, right? So they have to pay that off. And
do they get enough tax revenue? And is there enough tax revenue at the apartments to offset that?
Okay, so recall that the idea was build the park, we'll finance it, and then the development around it, okay, will, you know, help pay for that,
right?
Okay, but recall that there was a huge lawsuit on the developer that got, you know, fired from the job, which delayed by a couple of years, anything,
right,
you know, happening around there. And so it's a little behind.
But it's coming. You think it is coming to fruition?
It is coming. Yes. Okay. Yes. The second phase, as you know, I was in it a couple weeks ago, and it is, you know, the appliances are going in. And so it is happening.
Always rent. Never sell these units, right? They're all rental units.
They're rental.
Yeah.
Which is a problem because
transient population.
Yeah, and it would be good to have more home ownership in the city, and that is being discussed.
Yeah, I don't know if you did the piece on Pocket Neighborhoods last year or who did it, but I love the concept of even row houses. I mean, I like neighborhoods over apartments. I understand the profit. It's more profitable to build apartments because you can get more units and more revenue. Mm-hmm. I get it. We're talking with Ken Gosselin here at the Hartford Current. The other thing to maybe finish on is Bushnell Park. I mean, it's a lovely park, and there's great buildings around it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't consider it vibrant. I wouldn't call it vibrant, but like there's a couple things going on. Talk about the sense of optimism if there is some around that.
Yeah, there the housing, okay, that is kind of starting to build up around there will, I think, raise the visibility of it a little bit. I was talking this summer to they have their first executive director of the Conservancy down there, and she has some interesting ideas about bringing more activity into the park, okay? But the park is kind of struggling a little bit with some of these larger events that are there.
Because they can't accommodate them, or the parking?
Well, because you have this balance of park and event. Okay. Your big trucks come in, they compact the roots of these old trees, and some of the trees are dying. Okay. So they're,
whoa.
Yes. So they've had to take down some. So they're struggling with this idea of, you know, park versus event space a little bit. And so it's something they kind of have to come to terms with.
That's interesting. Yeah. The other things, you know, like, next time I talk to Runen, like some of the lights in Hartford, it sounds so stupid. They're not on like sensors. And so you could be there like 11 at night or 2 in the morning and nobody's there. Mm-hmm. And the light takes, you know, 60 seconds to turn. It drives me bananas. And it's not like anywhere else. The other thing is the supermarket thing drives me crazy too. I was in Springfield, which you could argue struggles more than Hartford. Mm-hmm. And they have a Big Y Express. Mm-hmm. And why can't we do that?
Yeah.
Like, it's a small, it's you know, doesn't have everything. Might not even have a deli counter, but it's something. Like, why are they having such trouble? Like, I don't know. I know it's a demand thing. The supermarkets would do it if they thought they could make money. But, like, are they going to ever – why isn't that on your 2026 list?
Because it's not a –
because it's not going to happen.
Because, well, there's not a plan for it yet. And, you know, I don't want to tread into your, you know – proposal, you know, cynicism there, but there isn't a proposal, but it is talked about a lot for the area around the ballpark. And there was always the thought that there would be a grocery store there, okay? And it's also been talked about closer up in to the north end too.
Yeah, I'd even put it in Aldi's. People would come from other neighborhoods to go to, I don't know, it's crazy. But go to current.com, C-O-U-R-A-N-T.com, and put in Gosselin with two S's, right? And look at all of Ken's stuff. Ken, happy new year.
Happy new year to you.
And look forward to talking to you on the other side.
Absolutely.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy bobopedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.